This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
McBride Homes, Missouri's largest home builder, is offering incredible deals throughout the entire month of June, $2,000 to $10,000 off. Go to McBrideHomes.com for details. They build a home like very few builders in the country. They have a certain panache about them. Please go to McBrideHomes.com for more information. Joining us in studio, Mr. Soccer Bill McDermott, back from a thrilling day at Ballpark Village watching the World Cup. There were hundreds of people there yesterday.
Yeah, him. Good crowd. And the United States ends up being successful in the semifinal. They get into their third consecutive World Cup final. I mean, you look at the history of the Women's World Cup. It just started in 1991. The United States has the opportunity. The opportunity. It's not finalized. This is the eighth World Cup. The United States has a chance of winning four of the eight World Cups. That is pretty much a show of domination.
When it began, 91, remind us, the state of U.S. women's soccer versus globally. Like, were we considered behind, on par? Did we have a sense back then? So if they do get four out of eight, that's domination. Mm-hmm. But when this all started in terms of the Women's World Cup, what was the global landscape in soccer?
United States and Norway, and that's about it, Martin. Very few, if any, of the other countries playing in this year's World Cup. First of all, some of the women weren't allowed to play the sport. And secondly, there was no money whatsoever put into the various federations from, you name the country, Brazil, Italy, Holland. Anyone of consequence in the men's game, there was not forthcoming in the women's game back in 1991 when it all started.
And is this because this dominance is because we're a little bit more of a progressive country and we want equal rights all the time for women and for men, and we started soccer programs at the grass levels and we really, you know, gave women a chance, and in some of these other countries they didn't?
That's a perfect summation, Frank, and as a matter of fact, it dates back all the way to 1972.
Wasn't a great question, but it was a perfect summation. New category, Frank.
All dates back to 1972 with Richard Milhouse Nixon, who signed the Title IX action.
Really? It mm-hmm. gets back to
has
Title IX.
Has a lot to do with it. Has a great deal to do with it, yes. Starting off with teams being fielded by intercollegiate play. It had a lot to do with it. University of North Carolina and their prowess in the overall sport intercollegiately had a great deal to do with it. Anson Dorrance ended up being the coach for the national team. He started it all off. And then the benchmark for the women's game, not just here in our country, but around the world, was the 1999 World Cup final when the United States won over China at the Rose Bowl, 93,000.
All right, how about some of the minutiae from the game itself, semifinal against England? The offside call that eliminated the game-tying goal seemed nitpicky. What did you think at the time?
I thought it was nitpicky at the time, Martin, and I thought error on the side of the attacking player, which FIFA has always said over the generations, of decades, just the past decades, error on the side of the attacking player. However, when they did indeed go to VAR, they show the final line where the last two defenders were for England, namely Abby Dalkamper and Becky Salbrin. Ellen White had the length of her foot in behind the two of them when she received the ball. Technically, yes, she is offside. But England did indeed have a chance to tie that game. The foul, also VAR related, on Becky Salbrin when Ellen White, again, she drew her foot back to take a shot inside the penalty area, inside the six. She's clipped by Becky Salbrin at the very end of the play. VAR reveals a penalty kick. Excellent opportunity for England to get back in the game.
Was that a makeup call? Do you think that call? And when they review it, I know they're looking at it, but I think they had to be saying, boy, we kind of hosed them the last time. Let's give them that. That's what it felt like.
That's exactly what it felt like. But if this referee seemed to be looking at the structure of the rules and nothing else. A goodly number of referees will tell you in situations like that, in situations like when it's a heated game, check the temperature of the game to see what it's like. What do we need? What's required in this game? Does the game require a yellow card? Does a player require a yellow card? But she was looking strictly and solely at the letter of the law. Did Becky foul in the penalty area, the last defender? She gets a yellow card in the process. Technically, that rule reads, last defender back denying a legitimate goal-scoring opportunity is sent off, which would have meant that Becky would not be playing in the World Cup final, which would be a huge loss for the United States, to say nothing of the fact that Megan Rapinoe and Rose Lavelle may both not feature in the World Cup final now. In particular, Rose Lavelle, who was the best player on the field in the semifinal against England.
Explain VAR, because I think a lot of people that were watching for the first time, what the heck is this?
I thought it was the VAR room, like a German war room. I swear to you, that I looked up, I go, oh, they got a VAR room. That's kind of good. Is that like the VAR room? We go to the VAR room.
But video assist refereeing, it was put into play for last year's World Cup for the men in Russia, but they have plenty of notice. It was introduced into the Women's World Cup final just months prior to the World Cup starting this year. It began on June 7th of this year over in France. Also, another rule that was introduced was that the goalkeeper has to have both feet on the line. She cannot vary from that. That rule was changed in the second week of the World Cup, thereby showing how flawed it was. But the VAR, video assist referee, that's when the referee is consulted by the fourth official on the sideline and the people in the VAR room, which is on site in Paris. They have multitudes of screens in front of them where they can show everything. They can delineate every possible play, a goal, a penalty kick, an offside. And if she is motioned by the assistant referee on the sideline or the fourth official or the VAR room in her ear, she wears a, like an IFB almost, Martin, which you have in now, by the way. Why do you have your IFB in now?
I like to have one open ear. So I use my TV earpiece. I've got my IFB in my ear. And I've got it plugged into the board instead of a true headset or headphones.
By the way, to wander far afield, you know the definition of IFB?
Oh, no. You should know this.
Oh, you don't?
Field
broadcaster.
Really? Is that really what it's...
that's what it is. This isn't just a hack.
That's very applicable because we get yelled at by producers.
Usually are interrupted.
On a regular basis.
Yes.
Make your thoughts tighter. We got 10, 9, 2, 1. Wait a minute, what?
It's way more so on the play-by-play, the live broadcast side than Frank and I do on a sportscast, but they do get in your ear while you're talking. And having done limited with just the Rams preseason football, every time they go to a commercial, they're like, 10, 9, 8. And you're saying, hey, what a great first half so far. We'll recap it in just a moment. And I always had, granted, I was a rookie, but I would have these players who had never done it before. So Ricky Prohl is in the booth for the first time in his life.
Okay.
It's great. Popular player, good talker, makes sense. And we tried to teach him a little of the ins and outs.
Yes.
They're going to be in your head talking. So immediately a player's injured. So I'll tell you what, Martin, that play right there. What's that? Commercial? And every time we go to break, in his ear, it's really, that's your impulse. They're talking to you and you want to respond. We're going to need to get a break. What's that? Break time? And you're like, and you're right, Ricky, it is time for a break.
Yeah. The age-old talking back to the Brewster while he's talking to you in your IFB. Oh, did that go in the air? Oh, I'm afraid
like so. Like Homer Simpson. Did I say that out loud? My thought bubble.
To let people know how much of an overdog or a favorite the United States team is, if you were to rank like the 10 best female players in the world, how many of them, and you could name them, would be from the United States right now?
A goodly number. In the top 10, there'd be three or four for sure. Some of the other... Well, Rapinoe right now, judging from her results of what she's been doing in this particular World Cup. Alex Morgan, by the rate she scores goals, Julie Earth, the central midfielder, the holding midfielder. She was Julie Johnston in the 2015 World Cup as a center back alongside of Becky Sauerbrunn. She's now been moved to central midfield. But I, in particular, love the play of Rose Lavelle, the least capped player going into this overall World Cup. But there's some other great
players. So you're saying four of the top ten.
Yeah, Ellen White from the England, Vivian Medema, who plays for Holland. She'll be featuring today.
It's your favorite
Sweden.
Player, right, Vivian?
Yeah, although I thought Lucy was a little quiet yesterday. She's in my top ten.
Lucy Bronze was very quiet yesterday. As a matter of fact, visibly off form. She was giving the balls away coming out of the backfield. She never does that. Phil Neville says she's the best player in the world. She promptly replied, I am not the best player in the world. Marta, you could see for Brazil at the end of this World Cup, it was finally starting to show that she was indeed in her fifth World Cup. And she said, hey, at the World Cup, in essence, get used to it. There are other young players upcoming. Continue to watch this sport.
And this women's team is entertaining. Did they go a little overboard? Was it Singapore?
Thailand,
where they went nuts. But the sipping of the tea, great fun. I enjoyed it. You may be more of a purist. Any issues with that? And let's be honest, the Brits get a little arrogant, especially soccer. It's their sport. It's, mm-hmm. Nobody else is supposed to win at soccer mm-hmm. except for them. That made it better to me. Like, well, if you'd done that against, if you're sipping the tea and you're doing it against Madagascar, I'm not as happy. But well, I think the Brits deserve it.
I'm sure that the United States women don't have a feel for the 1950 World Cup in which the United States defeated England. Now, it's the men's game, but irrespective of that, it was such an immense upset. Not just one of the biggest upsets in the World Cup, but in the history of organized sports. So England, the United States goes to back then. They've played each other in friendlies and games and other World Cups. But the fact that England is defeated by the United States in a World Cup semifinal, it shows you, first of all, that England is dramatically improving. Yesterday in that semifinal, they had a few players, case in point, bronze, who were a little bit off form. But the fact that England and teams like Italy, the fact that Holland is in a World Cup semifinal, Holland, as a matter of fact, now is carrying the banner for their country because the men's team did not qualify for the latest European Championship as well as the World Cup last year. So the women from Holland are now carrying the banner for that rich soccer-playing nation.
Okay, so we mentioned the reason and the progressive nature of the United States is the reason the United States women's soccer team is doing well. What about on the men's side with the best athletes in the world? Why are they ranked 30th? Explain that, how we are so far behind on the men's side.
The reason they're ranked 30th is very simple. They didn't qualify for the last World Cup, which from the CONCACAF region is pretty much inexcusable. The United States should be qualifying for a World Cup on a regular basis from the CONCACAF region. They have dramatically reshaping their team. You will see tonight in their first 11 some new players being added, but they are taking some steps to getting forward and trying to get back into relevancy for the United States national team for the men on the World Cup stage. You are judged as a soccer playing nation by what you do in the World Cup. And when you don't qualify for the World Cup, that's a huge black eye. Now, with that being said, Italy didn't qualify for the last World Cup. Neither did Holland. Neither did some other prominent countries. So it's a nature of the sport, Frank, that as the United States continues to improve, so also did the other teams around the world continue to improve, and they had huge head starts.
And what's the hope moving forward? Like, are you optimistic that the men's national
team...
Yes,
I am, because they have the new face of American soccer, the new Landon Donovan, if you will, as Christian Pulisic. He is always, on a regular basis, the best player in the field when the United States takes the field. Now, interesting enough, though, in their last game, in their quarterfinal against Curacao, he was, as I just mentioned, the best player on the field. When the second half came, the United States team disappeared. Had they been playing a superior team, better than Curacao, they would have clearly lost the game and not ended up in the semifinal of the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Now, Mexico wins last night. They defeat Haiti. So there's a chance that the United States, if they win tonight against Jamaica, if they win that game tonight, the CONCACAF Gold Cup final would be on July 7th, the same day as the Women's World Cup final. Women's World Cup final is 10 in the morning. In the evening at Soldier Field in Chicago, the CONCACAF Gold Cup would be placed between the United States, if they qualify, and Mexico.
Wow.
It will be bedlam on Lakeshore Drive on Sunday night.
Wow, that is good.
Now, Frank's got the Curacao game on tape, so don't give it all. Yeah, I'm coming over later.
All right, let's get into St. Louis and the MLS for mm-hmm. a moment. Sometime in the next month or so, or sometime this summer, we're going to find out for sure that it's coming. Your friend and fellow great soccer legend, Steve Petcher, was asked yesterday about attendance. Now, remember, this new stadium is going to see 24,000 people. Mm-hmm. He said unequivocally it'll be sold out every night. Do you feel the same way?
Due in large part to what Steve mentioned, the millennials. And also, it all depends how MLS Farther Lou plays this overall effort. A number one, the professional soccer teams dating back to the late 60s, early 70s, in the NASL days, in the mid-70s in particular, those St. Louis pro teams were successful because of the mix of foreign and local players, American players. So what the United States, what the MLS for the Lou effort has to do, I think, they're not going to ask my opinion, it's mandatory. It's almost mandatory they cater
to the Bosnian community. The largest amount of Bosnian people in the world, other than in Sarajevo, is in St. Louis, Missouri.
How many do you think we have?
75,000, which is an astounding fact. So the first three players, the first two players that you sign as your DPs, designated players, that's a concept that was started because of David Beckham. And that means a designated player gets paid by whatever the agent, the player, and the owner can work out. It does not go against a salary cap. So your first one or two players have to be Adin Jako, the Bosnian Diamond. Martin remembers the Bosnian Diamond.
Kid played at SLU?
That's Vedada Bisevic.
Okay.
He will be the oldest. He will be the oldest of the Bosnians who you could potentially sign, but I still think it would bear some fruit to sign Vedada Bisevic, Adin Jako, and Miralem Pjanic, who now plays for Juventus. You get those three Bosnian players linked with local players, whether that be
someone. Who could that be? Who could be some local names?
Josh Sargent, you'd have to do a lot of talking. A lot of talking to get him back from Germany, but maybe he wants to come back home.
What
maybe.
Does he make there? What could he make in the MLS?
Have Pat Maroon call him and say, get yourself a hometown discount. Come back on back. Win a cup.
He's doing real well in Germany.
So he's like 19 or 20?
Yeah. Josh is very young. And the recent criticism of the U.S. soccer and the coaches, if he wasn't on this version of the CONCACAF gold team right now, why wasn't he on the under-20 team? Why wasn't he on the under-23 team? So someone has seen something that Josh has to work on in his international game. But a player like Josh Sargent, players coming up through the academy system in and around the St. Louis area, but the combination of American players and foreign players is what makes things happen. Perhaps Tim Ream would like to conclude his professional career coming back to play in St. Louis, but that's what makes it work.
Do you believe a St. Louisan will be running this franchise? Because there's some strong candidates to choose from.
There will be a St. Louisan running this franchise without any question.
Taylor Twellman?
I'm not at liberty to divulge that.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not at liberty to divulge that.
Well, boy, you talk about some sizzle. I mean, not only was he one of the greatest players ever from St. Louis, but his personality, his persona, oh, boy.
How about that? You'd have SLU running the St. Louis, and you got DeSmet running the Galaxy out in L.A. Little SLU-DeSmet rivalry.
Chris Klein loves you will not get Chris Klein back in St. Louis.
No.
He is a California boy now.
I'm just saying if we could get Taylor, we could get a little SLU-DeSmet rivalry going at the MLS level.
I mean, Chris Klein, you want to go to O.B. Clark's? No offense against Jimmy and Joe O'Brien. You want to go to O.B. Clark's? You want to go to Polo Lounge. It's real simple.
Well, I'd go to O.B. Clark's. They might be listening, and I might be there later to eat lunch. So
boy,
that's my
amazing
choice.
Amazing pizza for an Irish pub.
Tremendous. And the wings and the overall atmosphere, I mean, you can't beat it. There is a rumor, an emphasis on rumor, that Joe wants to remodel O.B. Clark's. Now, there's an emphasis on rumor.
Whoa. Have they asked the assembled crew, the Bill McDermott, the Furmans, the world,
they
that are sitting
not.
There holding
well,
court daily?
Well, they certainly could probably pay cash for the remodeling after what they've made the last month or so.
Oh, and Furman Percelli's over there working on his Res Ipsa cases, so he doesn't have time.
The only thing now is the bar has been raised so high, when you walk into O.B. Clark's, you're disappointed if the cup isn't there.
Or a hockey player is not
right.
there. People are automatically expecting some sort of a hockey player to be there, whether it be from the Blues or a minor league team. But, yes, they did real well during the Stanley Cup aftermath.
Yeah, that cup has just been traveling.
Everywhere.
In fact, Dr. Michael Jones, one of our great sponsors, sends a picture yesterday of the cup at the gym where he and Doug Armstrong work out in. Doug brought it to the gym.
Very nice.
And is there a reason to bring it to the gym, or is it part? It's in your possession. Like I'm not letting it out of my sight. Like you go to the dry cleaners, you just drag it with you.
You bench press the cup 15 times.
A little bit showy, maybe over on the bench.
Dr. Jones, he's that eye doctor, isn't he, Frank?
He's one of the best in the business.
He works at a site for sore eyes. But thank you. Good night, everybody.
Oh, he brought material.
Hey, good morning to the morning zoo. Here we are.
Careful, now McKenna is going to start texting in jokes. Okay. Bill, great to see you.
All right, Martin, thanks.
Do we prefer Sweden or – I keep saying Holland. You've been saying Holland.
I guess, say Holland.
I guess it's the Netherlands if
it,
you're splitting hairs.
It is technically the Netherlands. I say Holland ever since Johan Cruyff came on the world stage in 1974
sure.
with Johan Neeskens, Robbie Rensenbrink, but Jan Youngblood. But they were – the truth be told, the 1974 Dutch team is what put that sport in that country on the map. They were clearly the best team that's never won a World Cup, led by Johan Cruyff.
Does it matter to the U.S.? I mean, is there an advantage today?
No,
and this game, by the way, is on Fox Sports 1 today is the match.
It does not matter. The thing I just alluded to it just briefly, but the thing that could be troublesome for the U.S. is if Megan Rapinoe and Rose Lavelle are both not capable of being the first 11.
Don't you get the impression Rapinoe's going to play, though?
I would certainly think so, yeah. She certainly didn't strain it that badly. It's not torn, obviously. But Rose Lavelle, hers is more recent, obviously. So she may not be able to play, and she's a big factor of that team at midfield.
Now, does your wife love soccer? I'm just wondering, like a conversation at the McDermott household.
She knows who Franz Beckenbauer is. She knows who Johan Cruyff is, but other references, more current, no.
Okay.
But she does enjoy it.
Those are some pretty strong ones already.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a short time out. Bill, we appreciate it.
Thanks,
we'll be
Frank.
Right
Thanks,
back.
Martin. Bye, guys.